Here we go.
Welcome to BP Wrigleycast, the Cubs podcast that hustles down the line every single time. I am joined by a full crew today. I've got Ryan Davis, Isaac Bennett, and Joel Reese. My name is Carlos Portocarrero. The Cubs have just taken game two of the World Series against Cleveland, final score 5-1. So, you know, a lot of the predictions that people had talked about where, you know, game one was kind of Cleveland's game to win. Game two and everything beyond, the Cubs kind of had the advantage on the starting pitching side. Has proven true after game two. The offense comes to life, scoring 5 runs. So it's even. Heads back to Wrigley. There's a couple things I wanted to touch on, but let's start with the offense. Isaac, what did you see today during this game in terms of how the Cubs scored runs today?
Well, I think the first thing that jumps out at you is they walked 8 times. Trevor Bauer was a little bit wild, and they drew a couple walks off him, and then pretty much everybody that came in from their bullpen was wild as well. So it was kind of more of the same of how this team scores runs. They didn't hit any home runs, which is actually good to see them put up runs on a cold night in which they worked counts and really just had a very prototypical Cubs offensive output. So I loved seeing that. I actually thought they had quite a few good at-bats last night as well, but Kluber was just so dominant, and then Miller as well, that they were able to make great pitches when they needed to get out of tough innings. So I think that was the best thing that I saw tonight was a lot of really well-worked counts and just very patient approaches.
What about you, Joel? I know you saw Jason Hayward hit that hard line drive.
Oh my God, you're excited!
But what other happening? what other highlights did you see today?
Well, I mean, it was the I'm looking at the box score here. Rizzo saw 32 pitches, so you know that was pretty cool. He drew 2 walks and had a hit. So he's only batting average 143, but his on base is 333. So you know he's playing well, but you know, and I'm sure we'll get to Schwarber. But before we do, Ben Zobrist is really pretty dialed in. You know, he had the triple and he went 2-for-4 with a walk. So that's really exciting to see because, you know, he really kind of tailed off toward the latter half of the season. And I, you know, I was always in favor of the move of trading Castro to get him, but I was starting to think maybe, you know, you sit him on the bench and you have Contreras in left and Baez at second. But he's really proving that, you know, this is why you traded for him. This is the reason. And he's showing that it was a good move. So I thought he was great to see. And then, you know, of course, you know, we can get to Schwarber, but Zobras to me is really exciting.
Ryan, let's hear from you on this, on the offense. Or not. We can wait.
Uh-oh. Yeah. He's mad at us.
Well,
there we go.
Were you having kitten issues like Joel or something else?
Kittens are just gnawing at me. There were a lot of positive signs yesterday. Even in a 6-0 loss, I thought that there was a lot of really positive stuff happening for the Cubs that going into this game. And then it all just kind of, came together for this game. Basically what you guys have all said, they worked counts. They made Bauer throw 87 pitches in 3 2/3 innings. And, you know, it was just really good. And it was a great game all around for the offense.
The thing that struck me as I was watching this game and I was trying to, trying to come up with some gem to bring up on this podcast on a specific player or specific play. And it hit me that this offense I needed a reminder, I think, and it just hit me that this offense is really incredible. It's really dynamic, and it's really when you're on the side, on the Cubs side of things, you know, you get nervous, you get panicked, you want the team to do well. But if you look at it from the Cleveland point of view, this is a really scary lineup to face. The fact that right now we've mentioned Rizzo, Zobrist, Schwarber, and we haven't talked about Javi Baez. We haven't talked about Addison Russell. I mean, granted, they didn't.
Bryant.
I mean, it's amazing that from top to bottom, when you put the DH in there and you got Schwarber in this lineup, it's ridiculous. And it's a scary, scary offense. You've got guys that can go cold. And we've talked about this on the podcast before, but some guys can go cold and some guys will pick them up. And being able to have that as you go is just amazing, because there's usually somebody that's going to be out there that can give you the production you need to win a game like they won today.
Yeah, that's what's incredible. It's kind of like the lineup is, I mean, I know this is funny to be saying this after last night when they looked pretty, things look pretty grim, but it's almost kind of slump proof in the sense that, you know, like you said, we've talked about Zobrist and Schwarber and Rizzo. Okay, well, that leaves guys who are struggling, who, you know, I mean, Dexter Fowler looked pretty rough except for that last at bat. You know, he's going to come around. Bryant is going to come around. Contreras is going to come around. Baez is starting to revert to bad Javi, which is a little unsettling. And they're getting nothing. Well, they did get a walk out of Soler, but is that the first on base reach by someone who playing right field? I mean, just think if they got anything out of right field, anything. But yeah, the bottom line is, you're right. There's just, you know, it must be so frustrating just to see this lineup that, you know, that, you know, Addison Russell hasn't been playing that well, but, you know, look what he did against the Dodgers. You know, he was the kind of the key. He was Zobrist, bunt, and then Russell's homer. And so, you know, he can turn around at any moment. So it's like you said, Carlos, it would be terrifying for, amazingly frustrating for another pitcher to face them, just to know that who's going to be coming up next.
Well, I do want to get to Schwarber at some point, but first, you touched on Javi Baez kind of reverting back to bad Javi. And here's my theory on this. And maybe this is, you tell me what you guys think, but I feel like he's not getting all the attention right now. The attention is with Kyle Schwarber. He's coming back. Rizzo starting to hit the ball real well. Zobrist is doing what he does, getting contact. They're talking about Contreras behind the plate and his cannon arm. He hasn't really had an opportunity to show off. He made an error yesterday. And it's like it felt like he was anxious to prove, hey, wait, don't forget about me. I can crush the ball. Remember me. And now he's expanding the zone and trying to make things happen. It just hit me today, and I'm curious to hear if you guys think this is way off base, but I feel like he thrives with the spotlight on him, and when it's not, he seems to be trying to do too much to kind of bring it back to him.
I don't know if that's specifically it, but I do think that there is something with him being moved up in the lineup. Madden was pretty questionable when he did it about how Baez would react, whether that leg kick would get kind of big, and I think we have seen a couple instances. He still had some pretty good at bats. I think he had a walk or he almost walked, but then ended up with an infield single.
Yeah.
I mean, there's still been good instances where he's worked a count, but then there's other times where, you know, he fouls one off up near his eyes, and then
yeah,
you know, hits another foul ball and then swings at one in the dirt. I mean, I think he had one of those at bats today, and I think he had one yesterday. I mean, it's just unavoidable. He's had moments where 2014 Javi is at the plate, and then other moments where it's good Javi. I mean, it's like the old Rex Grossman. Do you get a good Javi or bad Javi? And I don't think it matters as much right now because the rest of the lineup is so deep, but yeah, I think you're pretty on. I don't know if it's necessarily about the attention or the spotlight, but I think it definitely is a factor.
I feel like Isaac is a little too quiet. What's going on, Isaac?
Yeah.
No, I'm just reveling in something that hasn't happened in 71 years and 18 days. So just to go back to the previous conversation for a moment, it's amazing because you point out all of these guys. You've got two MVP candidates. You've got a couple of on-base stalwarts and Fowler and Rizzo. You've got the Hulk coming back and Schwarber. You've got the upstarts and Baez and Contreras and Soler. You've got Addison Russell, who is, you know, I love.
Beautiful.
Yeah, gorgeous. It is. It's incredible. It's an incredible offense. However, it's probably the third greatest facet of this team, not to just slobber all over them, but they're known, you know, first and foremost, in my opinion, for their defense. It's historically good. And then their starting pitching has been historically good. So when you really think about it, it's the mark of a great team when you can talk about one facet of their game, and it's actually probably their third greatest strength. So I was just thrilled to see this team come out tonight and do exactly what they needed to do, which was dominate in every facet of the game. And I think we all expected this. We all feel a strange chillness. Ryan's actually talking over on the side here saying, are we being too analytical or cold? I think we just expected it so much, and that's why we're here. It almost clouds the fact that something just happened on a baseball field that has not happened in 71 years. Just let that sink in for a moment.
Yeah, after the game, that's kind of what I was thinking about was I kind of let out a sigh of relief, and I'd said before, and I was talking to my wife about, like, you know, tonight is as must win as it gets in a game too. They really needed to split the series and, you know, go back home and really take advantage away from Cleveland. And I thought, okay, good. They split the series, and I was kind of thinking of it in that terms. And I was like, wait a minute, the Cubs just won a World Series game. Like, I have to let that sink in.
It's so crazy that we do get wrapped up in the fact that, oh, let's keep winning. Let's go another series. I think it's a great point, Isaac, to kind of step back. And somebody tweeted this, I think, before game one, and they said, it was, I'm going to paraphrase, but it was like, don't forget amidst all the emotions and the analysis and everything else, that you get to be here right now and experience this and enjoy it and go out there and celebrate or, you know, I was listening to the podcast that you guys did. I believe it was the one yesterday. I listened to both the last two this morning. And, you know, Isaac was saying that he had opportunity. He had these tickets and I was in the car. I almost like swerved off the highway. I was like, wait, he had tickets. Wow. But then, you know, the way you described it is, you know, you were sitting there and you were with family and yeah, this is something that we forget about this whole thing that's happening right now is that who knows when this will happen again. We know when the last time it happened. This is a big, big deal. And while we want to get into the game and talk about the game and do what we usually do when a game is happening, it is important to savor this so that however, you know, whenever the next time comes around, you know, we can tell the story that we were here and we experienced it.
Yeah, no, that's a great point. And I always harken back to, you know, previous regimes, and there's no point in doing that now. It's just, I was thinking when Isaac was talking, he made a great point about how the offense is the third best thing about the team. And it's just, it's incredible how for years, I just remember hearing Ed Lynch, the GM, saying, well, you know, we're kind of hoping that we'll claw our way into the playoffs, and then you never know what'll happen. And I was like, oh my God, that is the lowest bar. He's like, you know, if that's your goal, I don't remember, I was 10, 15 years ago and I knew that's like, that is so dumb. But you've got these guys who are so smart, just making these brilliant moves. And look at, like, think about it. Montgomery, that was, you know, everyone's like, oh, I don't know. You want to, what was the name of the Vogelbach? You know, I don't know. Vogelbach, you probably could have got more from. It's like, look what Montgomery did. He was aces out there.
He's Millerish.
That was great. And I loved that Madden let him just throw. He didn't overmanage and bring in Edwards for a guy and then bring in Travis Wood for a guy and then bring in Justin Graham. He just let Montgomery throw. And that was great. I loved that. And so as long as we're talking, you know, we've got the positive things going. Should we talk about Schwarber now? Because, I mean, what the hell? That was awesome, right?
Well, before we go to Schwarber, I did want to comment on what you just said. And I feel like that was kind of one of the unsung heroes of this game was that Madden didn't overmanage the bullpen. He did just let Montgomery go. When Santana was turned around batting right-handed, he let him stay in there to face the batter. I mean, this is what he can do. I think that we're seeing another guy. I'm not saying that he's going to be 2015 Jake Arrieta in the future, but we're seeing another guy who was a top prospect that the Cubs got that still has a lot of talent and I think may end up being a pretty decent starting pitcher for them in the future. And right now he's pitching really well. He's been, I don't want to say he's been the best pitcher out of the bullpen for them in the playoffs, but I mean, he's probably, if he's not number one, he's number two or three. I mean, this is a guy who's been one of their more reliable pitchers. And In a game that they absolutely had to have, he came in the sixth inning, got the final out, and then did the seventh inning and the eighth inning, and they didn't have to worry about, you know, okay, well, with a runner on first and two outs, you know, here comes Pedro Strop for a batter, and
right.
you know, they didn't deal with it. Madden let him do it with a 5-1 lead and just let him take care of it. All right, who wants to go ahead and talk about why Kyle Schwarber is amazing?
How about I'll start with a little bit counter to where I think you guys are going, and that is I was listening to the broadcast and they were you know gushing about what he's done and it's amazing to recover from the injury. I mean, I honestly do not know what the typical schedule is to come back from this kind of injury and if he's just kind of on schedule. But if the Cubs hadn't made it to the World Series, he would just be, you know, trying to get at bats in the Arizona Fall League and kind of whatever, just seeing the ball and working towards as part of his normal rehab. I don't know. But I just thought of you see this all the time in spring training, you know, the first few at bats that hitters get. Somebody out there gets hot and hits home runs and is hitting 500 in spring training in the first couple of games. So I'm not that surprised. That he's able to just step in there and do this. Granted, it's the World Series stage. Granted, it's against some of the best pitchers in baseball. But I think it's because we know this guy is really, really good. And that's something that they did touch on in the broadcast. And I think that's more of a reminder of how good this guy is and can be rather than, oh, isn't it amazing that he's come back from this injury? And all this talk about, oh, they asked him, does your knee hurt? Come on. I mean, do you really think that they would let this guy play if he was anywhere but completely healed from this injury and recovered? No, that's ridiculous. So I think it's more a tribute to his talent as a ball player and how good he is rather than this one time thing that he's come back from this injury without any at bats or four at bats in the regular season.
The way I liken it is if you look at spring training, how long it takes or they say it takes, or they give batters to get ready. Like 40 days of drills and batting practice and fake games and all this stuff to get ready to opening day. He found out, 10 days ago that he could be cleared for batting, for like real game action batting. And he called Theo Epstein and said he wanted to try. And then, you know, some live BP and some watching pitches out of a machine, and then two Arizona Fall League games later, and Schwarber is ready, playing in the World Series against guys. I mean, after sitting 6 months, I mean that's, and not only that, 6 months is a really quick recovery for an ACL tear. I mean, it just is. There's 6 months is about as fast as it happens. So the whole thing in general is really amazing.
It is. And Carlos, we talked about this yesterday when you were still face down from game six, but
it was worth it.
His first at bat yesterday, I thought that his hands looked a little sluggish and his bat was slow zone. But reflecting back on it now, I realize, or at least surmise, that it was jitters more than any lack of being able to get up to game speed. Because right after that first at bat, his hands looked like Kyle Schwarber of moonshots, you know, 2015 moonshots. So he's back in the batter's box. And I think that is a tremendous sign, not only for this team and their chances in this series, but also for the 2017 team. So my question for you guys is this. When he gets his inevitable medical clearance tomorrow from the doctor upstairs, do you guys support playing him in left field for games 3, 4, and 5?
Yeah, I'm just gonna say yes, and then you put Zobrist in right, and that downgrades your defense fairly substantially. But you can't take Zobrist out, and I don't see how you can take Schwarber out. So, I say yes, you'd be playing.
I think it's a tougher question to answer than you would think at first glance. First of all, that I know you called it inevitable, but who knows if he'll get clear to play in the field. I mean, but if he does, I don't know. Think about it this way. If you have him in the dugout And there's a he could be your Andrew Miller on the offensive side, you know. And granted, you want to get him 3-4 at bats. He needs the at bats. He needs to see pitches. So it would be even more unfair to have him come off the bench cold and see pitches and try to do something with him. But I don't know. It's tough to, you know, you made it all the way here with certain players playing certain positions. And granted, Zobrist wasn't even in the outfield as much as he has been in this postseason. But it's. I'll defer to Joe Maddon on this one.
Yeah, I don't know. And I'm the one who's been saying keep an eye out that they get him in left field eventually. I think with Kyle Hendricks on the mound, that might be a different answer. Same thing with Lackey in game 4, who's more of a fly ball pitcher. I don't know if I necessarily want Schwarber in the outfield for that. If it were for Lester or Arrieta, I think you could hide him more easily. But I don't know. Just because they clear him, I don't know if he has enough time to get out there and get it. I mean, he hasn't played outfield for months now, so I don't know how good I feel about it overall for game 3. But if they clear him and Maddon and Theo Epstein and Schwarber and they all get together and say that he can do it, then I think he can do it. You know, if you put him out there for 5 or 6 innings and get a lead and take him out and put Hayward out there instead, I don't think that's going to be the worst thing in the world.
Well, and
go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, consider this too. Josh Tomlin starting on Friday night for the Indians has severe reverse splits. This year he allowed an 845 OPS to righties and only a 685. That's one of the most severe reverse splits I've ever seen. So
he has a curveball that kills lefties.
Yeah, it's vicious. So, you know, in some ways you're losing some of that advantage with putting Schwarber out there anyway. I tend to think that I 100% think he's going to get cleared tomorrow, but I actually don't think that I would put him in left field, at least for game 3. I would want to see him play another game and see what was going on and pinch hit, like you said, sort of the mighty Casey coming off the bench. I don't think I would put him out there with Hendricks either. I would put Zobrist in left as it has been, and then, you know, take your pick from the guys in right. I'd probably actually play Almora on Friday, but I don't think that I would. As much fun as it is to see him out there, I'm just not sure he's ready for that. And you know, I think you really up the ante if you stick him out there on defense, and the risk becomes really exacerbated at that point.
Yeah, I mean, especially the weather. I don't know what it's going to be Friday, but you know, a game like today where it's cold and it's wet, do you really want him out there? Like, you know, he's going to give it 110%. So do you really want him out there slipping and sliding and trying to do something? I'm sure what Joe Maddon will do is he'll, you know, go out there, whatever, Friday or even tomorrow at Wrigley and kind of see how he looks and see if he does get cleared and make the decision as he goes. But I don't know. There's something about having him kind of lurking in that dugout that also has value.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, that's a good point. I mean, I guess I like the drama of, you know, him playing. I like the drama of him coming off the bench, but I also think that, you know, him getting 4 or 5 at bats is just the way he looked. And I think that he changes that lineup so much because you know what he can do to a baseball. I mean, I just, when they show that highlight, don't you love that homer against the Cardinals? Wasn't that the most amazing homer? You know, he can do that. And he can also coax a walk out of Andrew Miller. You know, he is his eye, which is almost as incredible as the fact that his hands are as fast as they are after this long layoff, is that his eye is so strong and he can work the count. And so he just changes that lineup so much, and it gives him so much more latitude with Bryant's, you know, swing and missing at so many pitches in the dirt lately, and Russell struggling and Fowler struggling. It's like you got this guy there that can turn on a ball and just, you know, knock it to Palatine. So yeah, it's just so exciting to see him back.
There's one other thing that I jotted down that I wanted to bring up to, you know, we talked about this after, I forgot which one of the Dodger games it was, but it was after Chapman had come in the 8th and not looked sharp at all. I was surprised to see Maddon bring him in the 8th. He looked a lot better, which was encouraging. His fastball was you know, right up there where we've seen it in the past. You know, usually in the 9th inning, he throws a little bit harder when he comes in the ninth, but he kind of had that in the eighth, carried it through the ninth. He looked a lot better and inspired a lot more confidence moving forward in the rest of the series. But I guess we haven't, not we, but Madden hasn't decided not to learn a lesson from, you know, the Dodgers series of bringing him in the eighth. Well, I don't know. I feel like you've got the arms to get that last out in the eighth inning rather than going to Chapman. But it worked out this time. Come game 3, 4, 5, you guys comfortable seeing him coming in the eighth to get potentially 6 outs instead of just 4?
I mean, I'd rather see CJ Edwards to get that one out.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like Madden's doing it to prove a point. He's like, because Chapman has made it clear. I mean, and I'm probably wrong here, but I feel like he's just saying, you're not going to, you know, I'm the boss of this team and I'm going to dictate when you go in.
He wouldn't do that.
I mean, it just seems otherwise. Otherwise, it just seems illogical, you know, because based on what we've seen, it doesn't work as well. Although it did tonight. So, you know, maybe 4 outs is the most he'll do. But I, you know, if Montgomery had given up a single and then a walk on the first without getting an out, would have you put him in for a 6 out save? And with Edwards warmed up, that's what I didn't get. As you know, Edwards is also a great pitcher. So I didn't love it, to be honest, but you know, it turned out okay, and I can live with it. It's better than the 6 out save.
What did you guys think of Kyle Hendricks' performance in the dugout today during the broadcast getting interviewed?
That's the big
I was telling my father-in-law, I'm like, yeah, they call this guy the professor, and he goes, why? And I said, just listen to him, and he's talking and talking, he goes, wow, he's just kind of there.
Did you guys notice he tweeted completely sarcastically tweeted Joe Buck hates Kyle Hendricks just when he wasn't when he wasn't talking to him and he was trying to let the next pitch breathe? I tweeted that and then immediately got ripped by the local ESPN radio host here for, you know, saying something sarcastic like, that's not true, he loves Kyle Hendricks, what are you talking? And I was like, oh my gosh, sarcasm font.
Yeah, no, I think I tweeted something about that too, where basically said they go to Kyle Hendricks for an interview and then Hendricks awkwardly stares at the camera for 5 minutes while Joe Buck does play by play. I mean, it was like, yeah, hey, thanks for joining us, Kyle. And then he didn't talk to him for about 30 seconds. And you just see Kyle Hendricks and his stoic look on the camera. Like he's looking around like, are you going to ask me questions?
It was pretty funny, I thought. It was funny. I think Hendricks was like, this might be over. Did I get one question? So I let the players play. Nobody needs to hear it. Just show the game, for heaven's sake.
Yeah. Hey, what did you guys think of Arrieta tonight? Isaac, what was your take on Arrieta? I mean, he did have a no-hitter going into the sixth, so that was pretty cool. But he didn't inspire a huge amount of confidence, but you know, you couldn't argue with the results. What was your take on it?
I guess it was basically what we've seen for the last 3.5 months, which is mechanics that are all over the place. His release points were all very different. I haven't dug into Brooks baseball or anything yet to see where his release points were, but I can guarantee you there was a lot of change there. And I felt like that his landing spots were varying by, you know, as much as 3 or 4 or 5 inches at a time. And that's not good at all. So he was wild. He would throw some amazing pitches and the next one would be 4 feet out of the zone. I just felt like that he wasn't allowing any hits because his stuff is borderline unhittable and they have no idea where it's going to go. But I really thought that the Indians did him a huge favor because he threw 43 balls tonight and only walked 3 guys in 5 2/3 innings. So
yeah.
they didn't make him work like they should have. They didn't would have liked to see the Indians, if I'm their manager, really just take a lot more pitches and either run him out of the game early because you know his stuff's unhittable or draw some walks. But they didn't really, they did 3, but I felt like it could have been 6 or 7 pretty easily. So I didn't see anything out of Arrieta that really impressed me tonight other than his stuff, which pretty much always impresses me. So like you said, it doesn't inspire a lot of confidence. I think there's a fairly decent, he doesn't pitch again in the series, but if he does, it could be a different result. So I would say more of the same out of him.
Well, one thing I found encouraging was he did. I felt like he did find his control towards the end of the game, like what, you know, the end of the last couple innings where he was pitching. I felt like he was hitting his spots more, and I saw a little glimpse of, you know, last year's Arrieta there, which, you know, was encouraging after the very wild first few innings.
Yeah, I pulled it up on Brooks Baseball just because I was curious while you were talking. I'm counting unofficially 14 swings at pitches outside the zone, either for swinging strike or a foul ball. So yeah, you're pretty spot on. They did him a lot of favors by swinging at pitches. I mean, his pitch plot is really all over the place. I mean, he just wasn't
had really to be.
In the zone. Yeah, strike percentage by inning. First inning, he had 10 strikes and 23 pitches. I mean, that's not good. Not good.
No. And they've got to know that coming in. They've got to know coming in that the way that you attack him is to work the count, try and find a way on base, and then you can run on him because he's slow to the plate too. But I just didn't see a lot of that. I thought they did him some favors and some advantageous counts where they were swinging when I would have liked to see a take, you know, if I was an Indians analyst or fan.
Yeah, I kind of mentioned this before we started, but Arrieta had C or C+ control today, based on what he's been doing lately. It was a C+ basically, and he used that to do 5 2/3 innings, only allowed one run. I mean, that's as much as you can expect from him right now. If that's what you're getting from him, 5 or 5 2/3 innings and only allowing one run in his final start of the year, that would be great.
All right, well, keep an eye out. We'll keep an eye out tomorrow to see what kind of news we get from the Kyle Schwarber front, if he gets cleared to play the field. And then we will see all of each other, all of ourselves, whatever it is, on Friday. Kyle Hendricks against, what's the guy's name? Tomlin?
Josh Tomlin.
Josh.
All right, well. All right, guys.
See you later, guys.
See ya.
Cubs in 4.